The latest news from Financeland with Wiley Sims from Smartline, station sponsor.
The information provided in this segment is general advice only. Listeners should seek individual advice from their accountant, financial advisor or broker to see if the product is right for their situation. ACL number 385325.
Good morning, Wiley. How are you?
Great, Mitchell. Good morning, listeners, and good morning, Courtney.
Fantastic.
Morning, Wiley.
Now, what's happening in the world of borrowing? It's getting a little bit more challenging once again.
Yes, Mitchell. Last Friday, we had a number of banks all increase their servicing rates or their assessment rates for servicing. So AMP, ANZ, Adelaide, CBA, Macquarie, ME, Suncorp, Bank of Melbourne and Westpac all increased this assessment rate. Now, should I just explain a little bit about assessment rates to our listeners? Let's just say you're borrowing at 4%. The banks assess that around about 3% at the moment above what you would be paying back. So they were assessing it around 7 or a little bit more in some cases. Each bank's different. Up to about 6 months ago, there was around about a 2% buffer. So if you were borrowing at 4%, you would have been assessed at 6%. In other words, they're assuming that you can still manage the loan if the rate moves to 6%. Well, what's happened is these now assessment rates have all gone up to between 7.25 and 7.6%. So we're looking with some of the lenders, they're assessing you, even if it's a 4% borrow, at around about 8%. Or near enough to 8%, which means that this has reduced people's ability to service the loan, which basically means on a given income you can borrow less than what you could 6 months ago, and in this case even before last Friday. So that's going to make it challenging for some people that are borrowing or want to maximise their borrowing capacity, and will make it a little bit more challenging. Accompanying that, many of the lenders have also increased their basic living expenses, the amount they factor in. Now, any responsible borrower broker these days, they must ask you about your living expenses, and the onus now is on the borrower to estimate their living expenses. And the majority of people significantly underestimate their living expenses. I was talking to a client last night, married with two kids. I said, oh, how much does it cost you to live? You know, food, electricity, gas, things like entertainment, anything else that you want to spend money on, petrol, insurance. He said about $2,000. And I said, okay, I'll write that figure down. But I said, the lender won't assess you at that. I said, it will be more. And he kind of looked at me a bit vaguely. And he said, oh, yeah, but we budget and we look after our money. And when we did the assessment, it worked out at $3,380 for a family of two and two kids. So the lenders, they put this living expense in there to try and ensure that people don't get into mortgage stress. The upshot for the borrower is it just makes it that more difficult to borrow. As much as you might save, if your income will limit your borrowing capacity, coupled with the fact that even if you've got no debt, no credit card or other debt moving forward, you're still going to get hit with these basic living expenses. And ballpark, it's around about $1,300 for a single. For a couple, around about $2,500, and say throw $400 for every child that you've got as independent. So this is really making life a little bit more difficult for people that are actually borrowing, and that's really something that's kind of snuck under the board. So if you're going to your lender, you may find that you couldn't borrow as much this week as you could last week.
If you say to me, for example, what are your living expenses, though, what I would say back to you would be thinking about, okay, well, if I had sort of no money left and I was just living on the bare minimum, that would be the figure I would quote you. I would definitely wouldn't be factoring in some of these incidental expenses like, you know, entertainment, which you would only do if you have spare money lying around.
Yeah, well, nevertheless, I mean, if people, you'd consider things like your utility bills, things like your, I imagine, looking at that big iPhone you got there, Mitch, you'd have significant telecommunication expenses.
Yes.
And those kind of things. Well, people don't factor them in. They just think, oh, it's just a background cost. And you really need to sit down with a spreadsheet, and, you know, we can send that through to clients, and people are often shocked with how much it does cost them just to exist without even using any discretionary income, things like expenses and that you can do without. Nevertheless, the lenders will still put an amount in there, and we may find some people's living expenses are quite significant. And one of the major costs that could factor in there that has to be calculated in would be something like childcare fees and things like school fees, for example. So if you're sending a child to a private school, that's a significant ongoing expense that you have to factor in and will reduce your borrowing capacity.
Now, we've talked about this before and you've brought it up, but we're once again saying beware of headline interest rates.
Yeah, Mitchell, I mean, we're always suggesting to our clients, don't be driven only by interest rates. You need to consider the features in the home loan that you require, things like redraw facility, offset, these types of things. And also with our borrowers, one question that I'll always ask our clients is, you know, what's the timeline? How quickly do you want that money? Because we may find that some of the smaller lenders may have a fairly long turnaround time, particularly if they've got sharp interest rates. So if you need to get settled, say, in 3 or 4 weeks, if you've got an urgent settlement, there's no point going to some of the lenders because they basically won't be able to turn that file around. So that's very important. But Tandem Ooling has actually put some warnings out about these headline interest rates, and we find these things are often touted at 3.75%. And they're saying, well, some of these are often introductory rates that revert back to full interest rates, and this is where you need to be cautious. And I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing. We do have some products, for example, that have got a 3-year introductory rate, and that can suit some people, but they need to be aware that after 3 years, they're going to go back to that full basic rate, which would be in the high fours, maybe low fives. And it soon changes that 3.99% into a rather expensive loan, or you're going to be stuck with a situation that you have to refinance, and you need to ensure that you've got enough equity in the property to be able to refinance out, because refinancing can only be done at 90% loan-to-value ratio. So we always suggest that you look at the comparison rate to find the true costs of any interest rate that you've got. So your 3.99% or your 3.75%, when you factor in ongoing costs, and particularly if it reverts back to a basic interest rate, you may find that it's rather higher than the headline rate. So always be cautious of that. Nevertheless, Mitch, there's still some great rates out there, particularly for people that have got 20% equity in their property, and these are ongoing rates. So again, always ask questions and be cautious when you see these things. I'm not saying that every low rate is necessarily a bad thing, but you need to do your homework on it and not just be driven purely on rate alone, and make sure that that loan suits your needs.
And competition is ramping up between the banks to try and get commercial loans and finance.
Yes, Mitch. When we did our PDD last week, there are a number of the major banks, particularly NAB, ANZ, to mention just a few of them, that were actually touting particularly for commercial, and this is one of the reasons that I really thought we'd talk about small business financing and commercial over the next week or two. There may be people out there, and this is our topic today, we're scratching their heads saying, look, I want to start up a small business, but they really don't know how to go about it. So we're going to do a little bit of Small Business 101 today.
Great topic. But before we do that, the suburb review this week is of Waurn Ponds. I think Waurn Ponds might be one of your favourite suburbs.
Yeah, Waurn Ponds, look, it's my favourite suburb because it's got a university there, but maybe it goes back to my old life. But nevertheless, look, I think Waurn Ponds offers outstanding value. And one of the neat things about Waurn Ponds, anyone that's living there will know that the sale price has been creeping up. Not good if you want to get into Waurn Ponds, but great for somebody who's actually got property there, and I know many of our listeners do. Recent sales have been creeping up to a median price of around about $550,000, and I think around about 12 months ago we were looking at $490,000 or thereabouts for Waurn Ponds. So that's really great if you're sitting on a property in Waurn Ponds. Not so good if you want to buy in there. But of course, what we're finding is Waurn Ponds is starting to get saturated. There are very few vacant blocks there, and people that want to live in that area have got to move further and further out a little bit. And it's the old supply and demand thing. When there's limited supply, prices are going to go up. And that's why people that want capital appreciation will always buy close to the CBD. So Waurn Ponds rents are running around about $395 per week. To get into Waurn Ponds, you're going to need a deposit of around about $50,000, and repayments would work out at around about $2,500, $2,555 per month if you want to get in there. And as you can see, that the median price for Waurn Ponds tracks probably around about $50,000 to $100,000 over the greater local government area of Greater Geelong. So again, a suburb that appreciates well and well located to the conveniences of, again, great shopping precinct out there and the facilities of the university as well, and great access, of course, to the Great Ocean Road and our lovely beaches.
Now, as we move on to today's topic, I imagine there'd be a lot of people out there that are thinking about maybe starting a business and throwing caution to the wind and investing all of their life savings. How do you get started?
I could say think about it twice before you even take the next step. Yeah, look, a lot of people have got this romanticism about small business and think, my life will be sold if I'm only my own boss. I thought this week I'd like to try and help listeners who want to start a business but really don't know how about going around and getting set up. Mm. And I'm going to assume today that the listeners really know nothing much about small business ventures and have got little experience in business. So please bear with me if you're an experienced business owner. We'll deal with things of more interest to you next week. But so I went back to my old lecture notes when I was a lecturer in the Faculty of Law and Management at La Trobe, and I thought, well, what do you got to do and how do you actually start up a business? And the very first thing you do, let's just say you've got an idea. You might go in there and have a look at something like eBay and look at all this furniture that's there and say, look, I'll buy all this furniture for $2.50 and 99 cents and I'll resell it on eBay at a profit. Maybe that's a great way to start a business, but you need to do your research and determine, is there a market need out there and a desire for the goods and service that you're going to offer? So it's not much point selling something that the market doesn't want, because clearly it's going to be difficult. Let's assume that you've got something there, goods and services that you think the market's after, and what's your point of difference? Why are people going to come to you and not go to your competitors? So your research, your basic research has to be done. And let's assume that you've decided, yes, I've got something that I think people want to buy and I've got a point of difference and people will want to come to me. Then you have to go through a business plan. And unfortunately, we find that many small business people there don't do the sufficient planning. It's time consuming and it's something that you have to do, particularly your finance on an ongoing budget. But some basic things in your business plan. How do you reach your customers? How do people know what it is that you want to buy? What resources do you need to operate the business? Where will you operate? Are you going to use a home office? Are you going to use an office, shop front? Are you going to be online and have a virtual business? What equipment do you need? What staff? What insurance do you need? Depending on the kind of business, do you need a license or do you need some form of permit? So if you go into the food industry, for example, you're going to need certain permits and licenses. What records do you need to keep? So all these things are really complex and you have to do your homework beforehand. And of course, where do you get your finance from? And this is where I might be able to help some of our listeners if they're considering startup finance or indeed want to grow their businesses. And what funds and resources do you need to get started? So you need to do some budgetary preparation, a bare minimum, cash flow, profit and loss statement, and also the funds that you're going to need to start up the business, Mitch.
And what about how you actually structure the business? Is that important to consider?
It is important. Of course, anybody can act as a sole trader and trade in their own natural name. Now, one of the problems, of course, that let's just say I decide to become Dye Enterprises.
Great name.
Great name, and I'm sure it's going to be a wonderful business, Mitch. But if I was Dye Enterprises, if I don't register that business name, even though your name may be Mitchell Dye, then somebody could come in and trade off that name if you haven't got it registered. So registering a business name in Victoria used to be about $70, and I don't think it's moved much from there, and that's registered for 2 years. But that protects your business name. So that's something basic that you need to consider. The other thing that you would need to consider would be the majority of businesses, I think any business these days has got a website. You need to register that website and protect yourself and make sure that somebody doesn't come in and usurp you. So let's assume again that we've got Dye Enterprise. We might have dieenterprises.com, dieenterprises.biz, dieenterprises.org. So if you really want to protect yourself from somebody coming in and usurping that good business name and maybe setting up a similar website that could trade off you, you'd probably need to buy out some of those other business domains, the .orgs, the .biz, that type of thing, the .nets, and that's going to cost you money. Mm. So these are the kind of things that you need to consider. But getting back to the actual structure of the business, let's assume now that we're not a sole trader. And sole trading basically means that you can register for GST if your business has the turnover, and you basically just put in a a tax return each year using offsetting your expenses against your income. There may be some benefits of other business structures. For example, you may want to go into a partnership with somebody else. There may be a company that you want to set up, and that has some benefits, but it also has some hindrances as well. The importance of the business structure and selecting the right business structure is it may have ramifications upon your personal responsibility for debts and other liabilities. So if you're trading as a sole trader, let's say you go bankrupt, then your debtors can come and chase you individually and personally for that debt. Where you may have, by setting up in a company or a trust situation, it may indemnify you to some extent. But again, you need to get good legal advice on this, so you'd need to be talking to a lawyer or a business consultant and getting the right kind of advice, because business structuring is important. There'll be taxation implications there. The ability to attract capital or money to your business can depend a little bit on your business structure. The cost of establishment, compliance costs, how easy it is to dissolve the business or recover the equity, the money you put into the business, can also be a result of how you actually structure the business. How can you expand the business? Again, it's easier to expand in some structures than others. How do you subcontract if you subcontract? And how do you distinguish that business goods and services from other businesses? So these are things that you need to think about. Of course, you can morph from sole trading into a company, but there may be difficulties in moving assets across, and this is where you need to get good business advice. Talk to both your lawyer and your accountant before you embark on the structure of the business that you're actually going to use.
Sounds complicated, really, when you look at all those different factors. Where can you get help to get the information you need?
Yeah, it is complicated, Mitch, and you wouldn't believe it. Last Wednesday, I was walking down Little Mallet Street, and I bumped into a bloke called Alan Cole. And Alan Cole was in this vehicle called the Small Business Bus, which is Business Victoria. Pure coincidence. I didn't even know that he was going to be there, and I picked up some brochures. So one place that you can go to, and a good starting point, is to go to Small Business Victoria website. The bus I discovered from Alan actually has an itinerary and goes from regional centre to regional centre. They're pretty much winding up this year, and I think he said they were going down to the Surf Coast after they had been to Geelong this week, and that was about the end of it for this year. But you can look up business.vic.gov.au/SBB, and that will tell you the itinerary of where the Small Business Bus is going. But the Small Business Victoria site, and I'll go through this very, very slowly so our listeners can get their pens out, business.vic.gov.au. It's the best starting point that anyone that wants to set up a business in Victoria can go to, and it really just walks you through the basics of setting up the business, what you need to do, and it's got checklists there, and more importantly, it's got a number of templates there for some of this financial planning that we need to do. They can also provide assistance with anyone setting up a small business for mentoring, and this is around about $250 to $300 a session, so some people may be eligible to get some assistance there, and there may also be some grants available for setting up small business. So I'm no expert in that area, but if people want to get more information, business.vic.gov.au, great starting point, and you can do your homework there, and really it will... Anyone who's considering starting a small business, it'll let you ask some of the questions of yourself that you need to ask and find out if that's right for you. The other one that's really important that I often recommend to our clients is to go to the ANZ Small Business Hub. And again, that's the SB Hub, smallbusinesshub.com.au, not the BS Hub, it's the SB Hub. If you forget about it, just look up ANZ Small Business Hub. And again, it's got a great site there with templates there that you can use with things like cash flow and some of this business templates that you're going to need in order to move forward and set your business up and be able to monitor your cash flow.
And if you're starting a business, what do you need if you want to then go to a lender to try and get finance for that?
Yeah, well, finance for a small business is really difficult, Mitch. It's complicated and it takes time. So it's one of the hardest things that you're going to find when you're trying to secure funding is to get funding for a small business, particularly a startup venture. One thing that's important is the experience or expertise that you've got. So let's just say, for example, that Wiley Sims was going to go into a new business venture. If it was something to do with finance or education because of my past experience, I might find that the lender would look kindly upon that. But if I was going into something like transport, which I've never been into before and I'm not much of a mechanic, then they'd probably frown upon that and say, well, where's your expertise? So if you're going into a business that you don't have experience in, then one suggestion I would make to our clients is get some experience. So if you think, oh, I'll go into the food industry and you've never worked in the food industry, then a smart thing to do would be to at least get some experience, whether it's paid or not, in the food industry, so you can go back to the lender and say, look, I've been doing this for 6 months, Y months, or ever. That doesn't mean that you can't convert hobbies or interests into viable businesses, but again, it's coming back to experience. So if you don't have experience, lenders are going to scrutinise that rather a bit more. So a business person, somebody like Richard Branson, for example, or Lindsay Fox might find that they can get finance a little bit easier than somebody else because as entrepreneurs, they've been able to, they've got a track record there to demonstrate that if they make a business decision, it's got a good likelihood of succeeding. The other thing that you're going to need is a personal characteristic, and let's hope that anyone that's going to small business certainly needs that, and that's tenacity. You need to be resilient to survive in small business, and you've got to have the drive to succeed. So simply thinking it's a romantic idea is not going to happen, because you will get some knocks and headwinds out there in small business, and you've got to pick yourself up, and sometimes it can get pretty tough, and I don't need to talk to small business owners out there who could probably give us lots and lots of stories about how tough the real world is.
That's exactly right.
So when you want that finance, the lender is going to turn around and ask you for a business plan. And the business plan will first of all have, and again, you can go to these templates to actually come out with these, an overview of the business, what products or services are you going to offer. You need to do an analysis of the marketplace. In other words, where are the opportunities and where am I going to get my customers from? You need to do an analysis of your competition. You might be lucky, you might have no competition. That'd be great, let me know about it and I might go into business with you if it's viable.
Or it's on a market that anyone wants to buy from.
Or it's a dead market, yeah. But basically you need to consider who are your competitors. You need to do a marketing strategy. How am I going to advertise? How am I going to get my messages out there? How am I going to structure the business? How am I going to manage it? How am I going to run it? And of course you need to get some finances and you need to put some equity into the business to actually get it going. In other words, your own dollars, not just your hard effort. And then you come up with an action plan. And we've already mentioned before, things like registering the company, the business name are important. You need to register for taxation. You need to consider, are there registrations, licenses and permits that you need. Again, insurance, because you don't want to be personally liable for anything that goes awry there. You need to choose the premises, if that's the kind of business you're going into, and start your marketing. And then lastly, but not least, start trading. And we've already mentioned before, your financial planning, go to those templates on those two sites and it will show you the kind of financial records that you would need to not only keep but to be able to monitor your business and keep it afloat. And lastly but not least, if you need capital to start up and you need to borrow money, if you're going to, the easiest way to get loans is some form of secured loan where you can use residential, commercial, rural property or business assets to actually secure the loans. If you're looking for unsecured loans for small businesses, it's harder to float, not impossible, but it's determined basically by the strength of the application. And the strength of the application, not only can it be enhanced by experience, but also a very well-prepared business and financial plan, experience in the industry, and in some cases, if you've got a guarantor, that will certainly help. And in many cases, business owners have to be the guarantor for their own loan. So in other words, they're putting their own assets up to guarantee the business.
Right. Well, specials this week for the listeners?
Specials this week. Mitch, many of the banks are waiving their application fees at the moment. There's really too many of them to list. So basically, if you're getting approached or going to a lender and they're suggesting application fees, there's generally lenders out there that will waive the application fees at the moment, so you don't have to be paying those fees. Suncorp Metway is still waiving the package fee for the life of the loan. I mentioned this some months ago, but it's still on this. It's a great deal. It saves $375 per annum. But Mitch, here's some money and something that would be news to every listener's ear. over the life, 30-year life of the loan, that's going to save you $11,250 on fees alone. So that's a really great deal from our friends at Suncorp Metway. Heritage Bank still got this special reduced rate offer at 3.98%. We can recommend that one strongly. One of our strong lending partners is Heritage Bank, and Bankwest has got their 3-year fixed rates at 3.85%. So there's plenty of great deals out there, Mitch. And again, if anyone's interested in this, they can always ring me on 1300 280 342. Happy to have to our chat to our clients about home loans, or indeed if they've got any questions about startup businesses or business finance, happy to help them along there as well.
And next week will be part two in the trilogy.
Yeah, Mitch, next week we're going to talk a little bit more about existing business owners, how they can get funds to grow their business, look at asset finance and commercial finance as well, and how to go about that. So it'll be a little bit more down to the nitty-gritty rather than the introduction, but I thought it was important that our listeners this week could at least have some idea, if they wanted to get moving in business, how to go about it.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Wiley Sims there from Smartline.
Cheers, Mitch.
The information provided in this segment is general advice only. Listeners should seek individual advice from their accountant, financial advisor, or broker to see if the product is right for their situation. ACL number 385325.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.